This is number 0005, the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's radio that doesn't fly through the air. Coming from your computer and right into your ear, it's the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed the Stuff File Podcast number 0005. And you can almost consider this a bonus show because it's the second one this week. I just got so much stuff I want to share with you, that's why. So coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Podcast, we'll meet Mike English, the president of Llama Caddy. Yes, he teaches llamas how to be golf caddies. And you know, golfers old and young seem to enjoy them.
A lot of kids and a lot of older folks really like it too. We're seeing younger kids and older folks just are amazed. They're just mesmerized by the animal.
We'll meet Tom Van Dale from cardsofchange.com. Apparently, he's found interesting things to do with your business cards if you're laid off or fired. I haven't found it yet, but apparently there are advantages to being laid off. It could be heartwarming and touching as well. Plus, you really do need something to do with those old business cards.
Somebody said, well, if they need, besides connections, if they also need hope, why don't we have them write on their business card one positive change that happened in their lives as a result of being laid off? And everybody looked at each other and was like, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. There's nothing like that where people spread some positive news when they were laid off. Normally, being laid off is like always bad, but if you read these messages on Cards of Change, you would almost... We actually had people contacting us like, I was hoping I would be laid off so I at least could post a positive message on the website.
There's the mailbag section of the show.
Incoming subspace signal.
Plus, we have O Little Town of Bethlehem, a sexy pope, Stuff File moments in history, and lots, lots more. And the guest Slater on this edition of the podcast, number 0005, you heard him at the beginning of the show, is my best friend on the planet, Mario LeBlanc. I have better friends on other planets, but he doesn't need to know that. I've written about him in the past in both my blog and also in the newspaper. Everybody needs a best friend. I really lucked out in that regard. They say that good friends will help you move, and best friends will help you move a body. That's what they say. That's all I'm saying. He's actually a police officer. I should stop talking. Anyway, on to the Stuff File, because there's lots and lots of stuff on the Stuff File. That's why the show is called The Stuff File, spelled S-T-U-P-H. You can find it on my blog, on my website, and you can subscribe to it on iTunes, S-T-U-P-H, The Stuff File. And let's get to the stories right here, right now. You know, there are a lot of people out there who have issues with their spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends or exes, and it always makes interesting fodder for the Stuff File, so let's get right to it, starting with a story from Pasadena, Texas. Not California, Pasadena, Texas. Authorities say a Houston-area woman who was burned up by her former common-law husband fried their pet goldfish and ate some of them. Has she seen the War of the Roses? Pasadena police said it's a civil matter and no charges will be filed. These seven goldfish were purchased together by the couple during happier times. Police spokesman Vance Mitchell says the man reported on Saturday that the woman took the goldfish from his apartment. Mitchell says the two argued earlier about some jewelry the man had given her but took back. She wanted the jewelry returned. Officers who were dispatched to the woman's home arrived to find four fried goldfish on a plate. The woman said she had already eaten the other three. You know, guys, if you break up with somebody and you gave them jewelry or whatever kind of presents you may have given them over the past, just let it go. Let it go, okay? Meanwhile, a woman known only as Jennifer has become the talk of Sydney, Australia, after she was unceremoniously dumped via telephone pole. Her boyfriend is either incredibly creative or incredibly cruel, depending on your perspective. He put up five separate signs he made from poster board on the telephone poles that line the street where the couple lives. The first sign read, Jennifer, will you marry me? But the next one read, just joking, we're breaking up. And the following one added, you have 6 days to get out. Local police took down the signs, not to preserve Jennifer's dignity, but because the boyfriend hadn't received a permit to put them up in the first place. That's just cold. That's all I'm saying. Okay, we often share stories in the stuff file of men behaving badly, because that's something, quite frankly, sadly to say, we tend to do. But women behave badly, too, and this is an equal opportunity show, so let's get right to it. Police in Round Rock, Texas, were called to a restaurant on a report of a waitress out front with an assault rifle. When officers arrived, they found that five sheriff's deputies from Midland, 350 miles away, who were in town for training, had given the rifle to the waitress known as Bambi. Aren't all waitresses named Bambi? For photos of her sitting on their patrol car. We take a lot of pictures here, you know what I'm saying, said Sam Biaccio, manager of the Twin Peaks, where waitresses wear halter tops and short shorts. Yeah, I think I know what you mean, Sam. The county attorney declined to press charges against the officers, but one was fired, three were suspended without pay, and the other was reprimanded. At no point at any time was anyone in any danger because we took proper precautions, said Vanda Bambi Purvis, age 25. Besides, I know how to use a gun. And had the officers gone to the training class instead of taking pictures outside of the restaurant with Bambi, maybe they would have known how to use a gun, too. To Merrimack, New Hampshire, police said a woman has been arrested for urinating on a police station after her companion wasn't allowed to use its restroom. A 28-year-old woman was charged with indecent exposure after the incident, which took place a couple of weeks ago on Wednesday, which started when her companion went to the station to resolve a 12-year-old traffic citation. Merrimack Police Captain Michael Dudash said the companion asked to use the restroom and was refused. He said that after the two left, the woman was spotted urinating on the sidewalk and against the station building in plain view of a nearby daycare center. The Nashua Telegraph said the woman was released after being cited by Merrimack District Court, and on November 16th, she has to stand before a judge. She could be fined to up to $1,000 if convicted. And to Newport, Delaware. Delaware State Police said a woman punched a gas station clerk in the face and held scissors to his throat in a dispute over how much money she had given him. The clerk at Country Farms on West Newport Pike told police that a 53-year-old woman asked for $20 in gas but only gave him a $1 bill. The clerk said the woman, certain that she had given him a $20 bill, screamed at him when he refused to give her $20. Then, police said, the woman stormed behind the counter, punched the clerk in the face, and held scissors to his throat. At that point, he gave the woman two $10 bills. As the woman drove away, police said she found the $20 bill in her purse and returned to the gas station. Police said she was arrested and charged with offensive touching and aggravated menacing. Okay, on to a skill testing question. How much would you think a really expensive sheep goes for these days? $1,000? $5,000? Try $347,000, which is a new world record, incidentally, for an 8-month-old Texel ram, which was sold at the annual sheep sale in Lanark, Scotland. You know, there's a lot of sheep in New Zealand. I'm sure you can find one dirt cheap. But anyway, British farmer Jimmy Douglas is the guy who forked over the dough and said the ram has a great body and strong loin. Ooh, he needs to get out. But it might just be worth it, as the ram is expected to father pedigree lambs worth millions for his new owner. So there you go. And while we're on the topic of animals, let's talk a little bit about llamas for a moment. We go to Dublin for our next story. Dublin's traffic is often snarled, but this could be the first time that llamas are to blame. Five of the South American animals, accompanied by two goats, ran rampant on the Irish capital's major ring road, the M50, causing about a 5-mile traffic jam. Police eventually corralled the animals safely into a trailer. Circus owner Alexander Scholl says his animals bolted when fuel delivery men failed to shut a gate. He rejects rival circus owner claims that he deliberately let loose the llamas on the highway to gain attention for his circus Sydney, which has previously lost elephants and a wallaby. There's no way this was a publicity stunt. If these llamas hit a car and kill somebody, who are they going to arrest? Me or the llamas, he said. Good point. Good point. And while we're on the topic of llamas, this is what we call a segue, boys and girls. Tiger Woods might benefit from having a llama on the green. Golfers looking for a good, reliable caddy can recruit from the animal kingdom through Llama Caddy, a company that provides trained llamas to golf courses to serve as caddies for players. On the line with us right now is company president Mark English. Mark, how did the idea of using llamas, or any animal for that matter, as a caddy come to be?
Well, I had the idea 20 years ago, and it's taken me that long to put it all together. I'm in the turfgrass management business, so I've been around golf courses all my life. And like I said, wanted to do it for 20 years, but there's a lot involved. You got to have a place to keep them. You got to have the time to take care of them. You got to have a course that will allow you to bring them out there. And all together, and it's just been really a special, great thing.
Well, what has been the biggest hurdle? Was it a situation where golf courses might not consider allowing an animal like a llama on their course?
Once they see it, they're pretty... That was easier than I thought. Once they see it, they're going with it. The biggest thing was just, you know, committing the time to do it. Meeting the animals. I would go to the fair every year and, you know, meet the breeders and learn about llamas and, you know, pick out the ones that you want to have and work with. It's real important to get llamas that are people-friendly and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a real process, but it's been great.
Now, have you had any complaints from, say, human caddies who are thinking that their business is going literally to the llamas?
No, human caddies is a rarity. I mean, you very rarely see it. I did it as a kid at Wilmington, Delaware, so I have some background in that, but that's something you very rarely see. So, no problems there.
Now, what makes a llama particularly suited to being a caddy? Is it the temperament of the animal?
I'm going to give the temperament the number one thing. They give you a nice, calm, peaceful feeling, and they're not in any rush, and they're not in any hurry, and just a positive vibe altogether. And then there's a lot of things about them that just make them great. They have a soft pad on their feet. They can walk across the green. We don't, but they can, and they leave no trace. The whole potty routine is amazing. We take the llama beans, that's the manure from the farm, bring it out to a designated area where the superintendent says it's okay, and actually walk them over for those beans, and they go right there. And we do 9 holes and go back to that same spot and go again, and not a problem.
So the llamas are literally potty trained?
They're literally potty trained, yeah. And then they're hypoallergenic, so there's no problem with that. Nice and clean, and very quiet. They'll make a little hum noise when we separate the groups, but it's not that bad.
Just a
great personality, great temperament. And what I've enjoyed the most is watching the different types of golfers. You know, you'll have some golfers that just go absolutely nuts over llamas and care less about the golf. They just want to hold them and pet them and walk them. And then you'll have the other golfer that, you know, I tend to see the better golfers really get excited about the fact that they've got a human caddy there helping them. That's something that, you know, is rare.
Well, I was about to ask, you're not about to get any golf tips from a llama.
No, but we supply handlers to go along with the groups, and they'll help you as much as you want.
Okay. Now, has having a llama as a caddy done anything to improve somebody's game? Are they more calm? Are they more serene?
More serene. Oh, yeah. Everybody's got their right attitude going. And what we're seeing also is just people that would even be interested in coming out to play golf are coming out to play. So, and a lot of kids and a lot of older folks really like it, too. We're seeing younger kids and older folks just are amazed. They're just mesmerized by the animals.
Now, before you started this business, had you ever heard stories or come across situations where people would use a llama or any other animal as a caddy?
No, never heard of it. Now, since I started researching it and all that stuff, I did find one place in the central part of North Carolina that did it for a while back in early 2000. But, nobody else, and that was a real unique thing, too, is we bought the animals, you know, with the full intent of doing llama tagging. It's not like I had llamas and said, hey, let's strap a bag on and see what happens. We got them, picked out the animals that we thought would serve us best, and went with it.
Was there any trepidation on the part of those who were either renting or selling the llamas to you when they heard what you were planning to use them for?
Oh, no. They've been the age-old question in the llama industry is, what do you do with a llama? You know, you can start a packing business, you can have them as farm guards, or you can have them packing farm guards, or you breed them for the fur, or you breed them for breeding, you know, and that's really the only thing they've been used for. So the age-old question is, what else can you do with them? And it sure fits the niche.
Now, you mentioned the bag. Is there any concerns or questions about a llama carrying around a golf bag full of golf clubs? What about situations like weather conditions, you know, being in a hot, sunny day with the bag on? Are there any concerns there? And if so, what do you do to prevent that? Do they get enough water and food and so on and so forth through the course of the day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole process is, we're going to make sure our animals are happy. We make sure the golfers are happy. Make sure the handlers are happy. We're not going to do anything that's not a positive experience. And it can get warm, and we just have to be real careful. We like to loop early in the morning and late in the evening, keep them in the shade, and watch for signs of dehydration. But in general, they're pretty tough critters, and they can take it.
Now, how long have you been doing this?
Been doing it for 2 years.
And how many llamas do you have?
We have a pack of 15.
And do you ever have
they're all boys.
And do you ever have a situation where somebody says, I don't know if you've named them all, but I want Fred the llama because I like Fred.
Well, right now, in the very beginning, you, the man, was the main draw. And now I think Legend's kind of taken over as the king. He's our alpha llama. And he stands up real proud and tall, and everybody seems to like him the best. But we have requests almost all the time. We had one boy all summer long that every Tuesday he took lightning out with him. So we've had situations like that as well.
Do llamas recognize?
He's a 4-year-old kid, and he needs lightning all by himself. You know, we stay there and help, but in general, he does it all himself.
Do llamas know people? Do they recognize people who golf regularly?
I think they do. Yes, I mean, they know me. That's for sure.
Oh, okay. You
know the handlers. They're imprint animals. It's amazing. I can go to our farm, and if I have a toolbox I've never brought in there before, they'll all come smell it and check it out. If it's something I bring with me every day and they don't really have much regard for, they could care less.
Hmm. You mentioned
I've never walked in there with anything new that they've not checked out. It's amazing.
Right. You mentioned that they're all male. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, females spontaneously ovulate. So you can imagine what happens there. So it's either you keep males or you keep females. And we went with the males, and so far so good. Knock on wood. They've done really well.
You know, a lot of people
have quite a band of boys.
A lot of people will make all kinds of excuses as to why they've had a bad golf game, and usually they're lies. But I don't think the lie of, well, I was stricken by an ovulating llama has ever come up before.
Never heard that one.
Okay.
That would be a first.
People can find out more information by going to the website, which is www.llamacaddy.com. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you plan on expanding this beyond where you are in North Carolina? Will you be sending out or starting breeding llamas or franchising llama caddies elsewhere?
I don't know if franchise is the word, but we're ready to take it on the road. We go to Maggie Valley Club now every Thursday, and then we go to the Sherwood Club in Brevard, North Carolina, on Tuesdays and Saturdays. We are talking to a course out at the Outer Banks right now about a Halloween weekend, doing a big thing there. We can set up a little petting zoo and everything. It's really nice with some of our younger llamas for petting. And then we're looking for a place to go this winter, so we're putting it out there, looking for a sister course.
Well, this is certainly a unique concept and idea you've come up with. Again, it's called a llama caddy, and I thank you very, very much, Mark, for being on the program with us.
Okay, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Mark English, president of Llama Caddy. Again, you can check out the website, which is www.llamacaddy.com. That's www.llamacaddy.com. This is the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
This is the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
This is the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And still to come on the program, we will have the mailbag. Also, a little town of Bethlehem, which is part of the mailbag. I'll explain in a moment. We also have Stuff File moments in history. We'll hear about a sexy pope and lots more stuff. Lots and lots more stuff. And we'll also talk about cardsofchange.com just in a few moments. But we have more stuff right here, right now. We go to Sharps, Florida. A former inmate in Florida was injured while trying to sneak back into jail. Sylvester Giles suffered several cuts from barbed wire while trying to climb a 12-foot fence at the Brevard County Detention Center. The 24-year-old former inmate was released last week from the jail after accepting a plea deal on a manslaughter charge. He showed up at the jail Monday night and asked to be taken back into custody because he feared family members of his victim would retaliate against him. Jail officials said they couldn't take him in and told him to file a police report. Instead, he tried to climb over the barbed wire fence and fell in his attempt. He remained hospitalized for his injuries. Breaking into jail. He's not even good at doing that. Life's tough. Life's tough. We go to Oslo. Talk about losing across the board. A man who complained to police that he was cheated by a prostitute found himself slapped with a heavy fine in Norway, where paying for sex is illegal. He contacted police because he felt he didn't get what he paid for, said Kurt Peterson of the station, the police station in Tromsø, which is in northern Norway. The 28-year-old man had paid the Russian prostitute a sum in advance, but the pair were ultimately unable to agree on the final price. I didn't know there was some sort of escalating scale with these things. Anyway, since they were not able to agree, the woman left and he ended up with nothing, Peterson said. Well, not really. The man ended up with an 8,000 kroner fine. That's about $1,325 US. The purchase of sexual services in Norway was banned on January 1st, with offenders facing a fine up to 6 months in prison or both. It's interesting when people are behaving badly, they still feel that if they're wronged against, they can talk to the police about something and the police will actually help. Here's another story in that similar vein, this one in Philadelphia. Philadelphia police said a man out buying drugs flagged down officers after he couldn't find the car he'd parked with his six-year-old stepson inside. The man, who was 31, was charged with endangering the welfare of a child and recklessly endangering another person. Police said the suspect had driven from Leahy County to Philadelphia to buy drugs before he flagged down a police car at around 4:30 a.m. He had a six-year-old kid out at 4:30 a.m.? Wow. Authorities said he explained that he couldn't find the car with the boy inside. Police found the car 2 hours later, about a half mile from where the suspect hailed officers. The child was unhurt and turned over to his mother. The man remains jailed on $4,000 bail. On to Honolulu. That would be Hawaii. Mayor Mufi Hanenman is known for singing, even at a serious event like his State of the City address. But now, some are wondering if his singing has gone a little bit too far. His latest stage is the city telephone system. When you're put on hold with any city office, you now hear Hanenman's voice singing into your ear while you wait. A representative from the mayor's office said neither he nor the mayor knew technicians put that song on the telephone system. Managing director Kirk Caldwell said there is an advantage to using the mayor's voice. It's for free. If we were to use a recording from a professional musician, we'd have to pay licensing fees of some sort, Caldwell said. City operatives said callers have not complained, but not everyone likes it. He can't carry a tune anyway. No one will tell him that. Everyone's afraid to tell him that, said Kakeko resident Rico Lefantana. Even council members who were surprised to learn the mayor was on their phones did not have too much to say. There you go. Well, you know, he'd probably go around firing people if they started complaining about it. No one wants to get fired. Trust me, no one wants to get fired. And while we're on that topic, if you do get fired, what do you do with your old business cards? Personally, I like the shredder. But that's me. But on the line with us right now is Tom Van Dale, who has a very interesting business and a website. It's called cardsofchange.com. For those who've been laid off, they can still put their old business cards to good use. I know what that's like. I know that real recently. Tom, how did this business venture come to be? Was it something you learned from personal experience? Were you in the same boat yourself?
No, but we had a lot of people. Actually, the way that the idea came to mind was when we were working on a client of a new company that I founded. Then the company wanted to do a promotion during the recession because their sales were down, and they wanted to, on their end, they wanted them to do more sales, and they wanted to do the promotion inspired on the recession. Now, we said it's nice to give people in a recession, let's say 30% off or 40% off, whatever, but they still know that you're going to sell them stuff that they don't need now. So when you communicate the promotion, you might want to do something extra where you show and to those people that you actually care about them and that you actually want to do something to help them rather than to just sell them something. Now, at one point we thought about what that could be, and if there's one thing that people during this recession need when they got laid off is new opportunities, new connections, and a bit of hope. And first the idea was just that people could upload their own old business card with their new contact information, and that was it. Now, the client said, how are we going to be better than a careerbuilder.com or something, or another website where you can get a job? And we could never compete with something like that. So we thought about how can we make it different, and by already using your card as the medium to write your new contact information, somebody said, well, if they also need hope, why don't we have them write on their business card one positive change that happened in their lives as a result of being laid off? And everybody looked at each other and was like, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea. Because there's nothing like that where people spread some positive news when they were laid off. Normally, being laid off is like always bad, but if you read these messages on cards of change, you would almost... We actually had people contacting us like, I was hoping I would be laid off so I at least could post a positive message on the website. So that's more or less how it came about, and the reactions have been great. The results of the people posting stuff have been great, and especially the reactions of people that just saw a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel because of this initiative. It has been very, very, very nice.
How long has the site been in operation?
Site has been in operation since the beginning of June, and what you see is that there's a lot of traffic of people watching. There's not a lot of people actually uploading, but that said, to upload, you need a lot of steps happening. You need to be one of the people that, A, of course, you got to be laid off. Second, you still have to have your old business cards. And a lot of people that get laid off, first thing they do is throw away their old business cards because they're frustrated or something like that. So you need to find an old business card. Then you need to figure out what you're going to write on it, actually do it. Then you need to take a picture, and then you need to upload it. So there's a lot of steps. So that said, the people that do upload their website on their card on the website really go to great lengths of making it a creative submission, making it something that stands out, and they totally provide the silver lining of the website. So it's not about quantity, it's about quality, and there's a lot of quality people up on the website.
Besides the good feelings that people get in doing this and reading this, have you had situations or heard stories where people have received job offers because of what they've written on the back of their old business cards on your website?
Well, I mean, the best example is that I, by seeing some people uploading their card on the website with the company that I have, actually offered two or three people a freelance gig at my company. So yes, the answer is yes. There are people that
uploaded their card and got jobs.
What are some of the things that have been written on the cards? I noticed that one of them, one guy stapled a bunch of old cards together to make a massive business card that reads, started my own damn agency.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. There's so many creative examples. One that comes to mind now is a guy who got laid off, folded his card in an origami style way into a paper airplane, and the message written on it was, I'm flying away.
Hmm.
A second one is, for example, the brutally honest ones of a girl that says, no more cubicle hell. Then you've got another person, which I thought was very funny, who says that she's now a professional surf bum. I thought that was kind of funny. Then the very emotional ones, that woman lost her job, but she now is planning her daughter's wedding, for example. Somebody who has spent her last paycheck on traveling. I mean, there's a lot of uplifting messages, and if you're one of those people who has been laid off, it's definitely worth paying a visit.
Now, have you heard from any potential, or not potential, any former employers out there? First of all, can people on the website see the card and see where the person worked, or is that information not available?
Yeah. So the initial idea was, before we added the part of write your uplifting message on your card, the initial idea was, write your new contact information on your old business card. That was it. So you would see where that person worked, what his function was. The only thing is, you would have his new contact information. So if you, for example, you're an IT specialist at IBM, I'm just saying an example, then you would see already, hey, this guy worked at IBM, that's a good company, he was an IT specialist, okay, I'm in search for somebody like that, he lives in that area. That's all on your old business card. The only thing you need is your new contact information. So that was the initial idea, and then we added the uplifting message part. Now, to answer the other part of your question, no, we have not yet been contacted by any company that says, hey, we like it, or hey, we really don't like it because you're actually showing that we've laid off X amount of people. No, we have not gotten any reactions like that, only by the people that got laid off or people that just are still in a job but are looking at the website, and those reactions have really been very, very good.
Well, it's a most interesting site indeed. The website is cardsofchange.com. That's www.cardsofchange.com. Any words of advice before I let you go for people out there who may be thinking of uploading onto your site?
Yes. Just like when you go for a job interview, make sure you stand out. Do your best and do something different. Think about it. Prepare it, and produce whatever you're going to produce and upload on the website, produce it in the most brilliant way possible, and you will stand out, and you will have people clicking on your card and sending you an email. And keep your hopes up. This recession is only about reinventing yourself, and good things will happen.
Tom, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you for giving me this time.
Tom Van Dale from the website cardsofchange.com. That's www.cardsofchange.com. You can go to my website, peteranthonyholder.com. Follow the links. You'll find all the information and links you need about cardsofchange.com. This is the Stuff File Podcast.
This is the Stuff File.
And still to come on the program, we have a Stuff File moment in history. We'll also hear a little bit of our sexy Pope. And an idiot of the day in the Stuff File, but right now, it's the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And we have just a couple of letters in the mailbag today, just two, as a matter of fact, because I'm going to play a piece in conjunction with one of them. The first letter in the mailbag comes from Risa, and it came via email. She says, I downloaded your podcast via iTunes and have them all so far, but I also downloaded O Little Town of Bethlehem. Not what I expected. What's the story behind this? Okay, let me explain this one. Risa, this is actually some serious stuff, as I'm sure you've now found out by downloading it. But let me start off with a shameless plug first. If you like the podcast and you get them from iTunes, feel free to review them in the customer ratings. Your good words can help get the buzz out. And that goes for Risa and everyone else who might be listening and getting them from iTunes. Okay, first, the reason why it shows up in the download is previously doing this podcast, the only piece of audio that was on my blog was O Little Town of Bethlehem, so that's why it's there. Now to its creation and why it even exists. You may remember back in 2002, when the birthplace of so many religions was under siege, I felt compelled to put together the audio piece, trying to be as impartial as possible, not choosing any side. At the time in question, Israeli forces clashed with Palestinian fighters throughout the northern West Bank and launched airstrikes in response to a Hezbollah missile attack across Israel's border with Lebanon, surrounding more than 100 armed Palestinians who were holed up in the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. I was moved by the story to create a montage of news with Mahalia Jackson's O Little Town of Bethlehem as the background from which I weave the news clips through it. Now, I had forgotten about the audio, but the odd thing about it is that even though I had not put up any page to connect to it, my version of the song was making its way around the internet. So I thought I would put a link back up to it again for any and everyone to listen to it and draw their own thoughts and conclusions. As I said, I tried to be as impartial as possible, and I think I succeeded because at the time that I prepared it, again back in, 2002, and aired it on the radio in both Montreal and Toronto, I got a lot of angry emails from people on both sides claiming that I was biased towards the other side. Believe me, with the news clips I had that were available to me, I made it as unbiased as I possibly could, but you can decide for yourself because I'm going to play it for you right now. By the way, the three newsworthy voices you'll hear in this piece, besides the reporters and the people in the streets, are Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat, and UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. So here is that piece of O Little Town of Bethlehem, which I edited back in 2002.
Israeli tanks are just down the hill from Manger Square in Bethlehem, and an Israeli attack helicopter was trading fire with Palestinian gunmen in the square itself, the closest Israeli troops have been to the spot where Jesus was born.
The suicide bomber walked into a restaurant in Haifa and blew himself up. The powerful bomb, strong enough to rip off the metal facade, completely gut the restaurant and blow off the roof, caused many deaths and injuries.
The first explosion was at a crowded restaurant in the port city of Haifa. More than a dozen people were killed. The second bomber targeted a paramedic station at a Jewish West Bank settlement, injuring several members of an intensive care unit.
The silent stars go by.
Hours later, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon made a televised speech in which he declared that his country was in a war against terrorism.
Yet in the dark street shineth the
rifle fire echoed off the walls of Bethlehem this morning, and helicopter gunships looked for targets in Manger Square next to the Church of the Nativity. The tanks rolling through town have forced up to 100 Palestinians, many of them armed, to take refuge this evening within the walls of the biblical birthplace of Christ.
For Christ is born of Mary.
We heard for an hour or two a number of Israeli helicopters and warplanes flying above. And then we could see from Beit Sahur, that's the town next to Bethlehem, a column of tanks entering. and now I've been able to see some tanks parked just outside Manger Square. That's right in the heart of Bethlehem, right next to the Church of the Nativity. So it does appear that Israeli forces have made their presence felt in quite some way in this town.
While mortar sleep, the angels keep.
They have destroyed completely seven of our buildings, completely, around my office.
They'll watch a wandering love.
A bomb went off in a supermarket in a Jerusalem neighborhood around midday on Friday, when the supermarket is full of people buying food for their weekend. There are a number of casualties, according to officials. It appears also that this was a woman suicide bomber who set herself off and blew up the entranceway of the supermarket.
In a separate battle, a Palestinian woman and her son were wounded by Israeli gunfire. They later died, and a second son indicated that the Israelis would not let the ambulances through.
And praising to God, O King.
I am appealing to the whole international world to stop this aggression against our people.
First, to bring it to the cabinet should be approved. Second, he cannot take anyone with him because there are wanted and murderers around him there. And the third thing is going to be one-way ticket.
Two men.
I urge the leadership of both peoples to stay the course and continue the quest for peace. The essential first step is an immediate ceasefire.
So there you go, Mahalia Jackson, a little town of Bethlehem, with a couple of news stories thrown in. Let me know what you think. Send me an email, peter@peteranthonyholder.com, or drop me a line on Facebook, or send me a tweet on Twitter. Many ways to find me. There you go.
Incoming subspace signal.
We have one more item for the mailbag. We have another note from Facebook, another one that comes in from Marie Paul. If you heard the last show, she sent me a note then, too, so she's two for two. Hi, Peter. I've been having a crappy day, but 10 minutes into the stuff file, I'm laughing my head off. Thank you. Well, Marie-Paul, thank you, but I only hope you were laughing at the funny parts. That's all I'm concerned about. Oh, still to come on the program, speaking of funny parts, we have a stuff file moment in history. Also, the sexy Pope. That might get some mail, too. And a stuff file idiot of the day. That's all coming up. This is the Stuff File Podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Ben Patrick Johnson, voiceover actor, male model, and all-around nice guy. Some days. When I'm not voicing blockbuster movie trailers, TV promos, or doing charity work like this, I also write novels. I have four of them out, and I know it's a gift. Anyway, my latest novel is actually my most personal. It's called If the Rains Don't Cleanse, which tells the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo, loosely based on my own parents. Everyone thinks you should read it, including me, of course. You can order it right now. It's just a mouse click away at Amazon.com or Amazon.ca. You'll find links for it, along with several reviews, on the podcast page at www.peteranthonyholder.com. Remember the title, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, by me, Ben Patrick Johnson. Buy a copy because, I got to be frank, doing voiceover liners for Peter Anthony Holder's podcast, it isn't exactly paying the bills. If the Rains Don't Cleanse. You're listening to the Stuff File Podcast with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that doesn't fly through the air like a communicable disease.
And we're in the home stretch near the end of the show. Just a few more items to go. Still to come, we have a sexy Pope and also an idiot of the day, plus more stuff from the Stuff File Podcast. Now, generally speaking, most of the stuff we do is all brand new. It's all fresh. It's all really current stuff, but every once in a while we like to dig back into history. sometimes ancient history, to bring you something we call the Stuff File Moment in History. So let's do that right now. Fire up the special theme music.
Let's rock this joint!
If the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Those are great moments in history. These are not.
Tonight, we take you back to 1979. The date is April 20th. The President of the United States is Jimmy Carter. When you're the leader of the free world, needless to say, you make enemies. Jimmy Carter had his share. It was on that fateful spring day, while on a fishing trip in Plains, Georgia, that President Jimmy Carter came face to face with danger. Who could foresee what was lurking in the calm Georgian waters? Who could believe what awaited the former peanut farmer? Who knows how close Walter Mondale was from that one heartbeat away to the job he really wanted? It was on April 20th, 1979, that Jimmy Carter met up with a killer rabbit.
Hey, what's up, Doc? What's cooking? What's up, Doc? Oh, you're looking for Bugs Bunny Bunting. Duck is gonna hunting just to get a rabbit skin, but now the rabbit's gonna get...
The rabbit, which may have been fleeing a predator, swam toward his boat, hissing menacingly, its teeth flashing and nostrils flared. President Carter was forced to swat at the vicious beast with a canoe paddle, which apparently scared it off.
Kill the rabbit, kill the rabbit, kill the rabbit.
Upon his return to the White House, Carter told his staff about the furry amphibian's assault. Most of them refused to believe him, insisting that rabbits can't swim. Although since most mammals can swim, there's no reason to believe that rabbits cannot, although I am a mammal and I cannot swim, so the point is moot. And that even if they could, they certainly wouldn't attack humans, and certainly not presidents. Fortunately, a White House photographer had been on the scene and had recorded the bizarre attack. The photograph showed Carter with his paddle raised, warding off a small creature which might or might not have been a rabbit. One staffer was quoted as saying, "You couldn't tell what it was." Undaunted by their skepticism, Carter had the image enlarged, and there it was, a killer bunny rabbit, apparently bent on assassinating the president. The story might have ended there, except that White House Press Secretary Jody Powell mentioned the incident to Associated Press reporter Brooks Jackson in August. The Washington Post ran it as front page news. The original photograph was not available until the Reagan administration leaked it in 1981, but the paper filled the gap with a cartoon modeled on the poster of the movie Jaws, starring the rabbit and entitled Paws. Powell made a belated attempt to impress the public with the seriousness of the attack, calling the creature a swamp rabbit. But since Carter had to appease his rabbit-loving constituents by insisting that he had not actually smacked his buck-tooth opponent with his paddle, but only splashed water on it to drive it away, it seemed unlikely that he had been in danger. The entire episode became a symbol of Carter's floundering presidency. According to Powell, it showed the extent to which an insignificant incident can snowball and end up in the newspapers and news shows across the country. Powell has his point. We all remember Michael Dukakis in a tank, and let's not forget a certain local politician and his visit to a cheese factory. Carter biographer Douglas Brinkley says, it just played up the Carter flake factor. I mean, he had to deal with Russia and the Ayatollah, and here he was supposedly fighting off a rabbit. One does have to watch out for rabbits. Remember the film The Day of the Lepus? Yes. King Falk of Jerusalem should have watched out for rabbits as well. He was the Jimmy Carter of the 12th century. He was reportedly killed by a rabbit, while Philip, son and heir of Louis VI of France, was consigned to an early grave by a diabolical pig. In fairness to the two men, their deaths were horse-assisted. The rabbit and the pig merely dashed out into their paths at a bad moment, causing their horses to throw them and break their necks. So images of an evil-tempered killer bunny must, alas, be consigned to Monty Python.
Well, that's no ordinary rabbit. That's the most foul, cruel, and bad-tempered rodent you ever set eyes on.
And those are your Stuff File moments in history.
This is the Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have a Stuff File story for you and also an idiot of the day. So let's get to it as we're running out of time. You may remember President Barack Obama had his problem with a fly a little while ago. Well, now Pope Benedict XVI has his spider. As the Pope addressed politicians and diplomats in Prague a couple of Saturday afternoons ago, a large spider appeared on his white robe. The Pope didn't seem to notice at first, but journalists following the speech on a large screen flinched as the spider inched toward Benedict's neck. When it finally reached his ear, the pontiff gave it a swat, but it then reappeared on the Pope's left shoulder and scampered down his robe. The Pope swatted a spider? Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, you remember back in June, Obama famously swatted and killed a fly that landed on him during an interview for CNBC at the White House? Of course, our insane friends at PETA frowned on the fly killing. By the way, here's something, a little statistic for you, something you probably didn't know about spiders. There are so many spiders, there's so many of them, on this entire planet that statistically you are never more than 6 feet away from one of them. True story. Look around. There's a spider somewhere very close. By the way, when Pope Benedict became Pope back in 2005, of course it was on televisions everywhere. I watched the whole thing like so many other people did. First moment when he came out on the balcony as Pope to speak to the masses, he chanted a prayer. When I heard him do this, it reminded me of an album that I had featuring the Benzedrine monks of Santo Domenico. I thought, what would it be like if I put the two together? And Lord knows I love audio editing. So I decided to go to work on something that I like to call Sexy Pope. Ladies and gentlemen, Pope Benedict XVI.
Sancti Apostoli Petrus et Paulus, de quorum potestat et auctoritate confidimus, ipsi intercedant pro nobis ad Dominum.
Just reach out and touch me. Come on, honey, tell me so.
Precibus et meritis, Beate Maria Semper Virginis, Beate Michaelis Arcangeli, Beate Ioannis Baptiste, et Sanctorum Apostolorum Petri et Pauli, et Omnium Sanctorum, Miseriator Vestri Omnipotens Deus, et dimissis peccat omnibus peccatis vestris, perducat vos Iesus Christus ad vitam aeternam.
Amen. He's acting shy, looking for an answer. Come on, honey, let's spend the night together. Now hold on a minute before we go much further. die so I can call my mother.
Indulgentiam, absolutionem et remissionem omnium peccatorum vestrorum, spatium veret fructuose penitentiae, cor semper penitens et emendationem vitae, gratiam et consolationem Sancti Spiritus, et finalem perseverantiam in bonis operibus, tribu ad vobis, omnipotens et misericors Dominus.
Amen.
If you want my body, and you think I'm sexy, come on, sugar, let me know. If you really need me, just reach out and touch me. Come on, honey, tell me so.
Et benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et maneat semper.
Amen.
Come on, honey, tell me so.
Now I know some of you will be saying that I'm going straight to hell for this. May I remind you that A, that's where most of my friends will be, so I won't be lonely. And B, I am Protestant. The very origin of that word is protest. So you have to let me have a little fun at the expense of the Catholic Church. If you want to send me all the Protestant jokes you can find, go right ahead. I can take it. And finally on the program, we have, for your listening pleasure, an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police in eastern Pennsylvania said a man charged with drunken driving faces more charges after allegedly trying to steal a tow truck a few hours later to retrieve his impounded vehicle. Police alleged that 29-year-old Timothy Pear of White House Station, New Jersey, was spotted at 7:40 p.m. inside a tow truck at Saucon Collision, which was closed at the time. Police said he acknowledged that he was trying to steal the truck to remove his impounded vehicle. Authorities said in court records he had been arrested on a drunken driving charge at 5 p.m., but did not say in what jurisdiction. Pear is charged with criminal attempt to steal a vehicle, theft from a vehicle, and loitering and prowling at nighttime. He was taken to Northampton County Prison in lieu of $20,000 bail. So at 5 p.m., you get pulled over for DUI, your vehicle gets impounded, and at 7:40 p.m., you decide to break into the impound lot and steal a tow truck so you can remove your car. What would make a person do this? Why would anyone do this, drunk or sober? It's simple. You're an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, tell all your friends. Want to get this out there as much as possible and make this as big as possible, but I can only do it with your help. Okay? The website is peteranthonyholder.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and podcast number. In this case, it's 0005. You can email me at peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter account is twitter.com/PAHolder, and the Facebook is facebook.com/PAHolder. Looking forward to having you join us on the next edition of the Stuff File podcast with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Again, tell all your friends. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File podcast with Peter Anthony Holder.
a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.